Blog Talk Radio.
Family, hello and welcome. We're coming to you live as we do every Monday at this time. Thank you very much for listening and being part of the voice and radio voice of Eastern Airlines. It's always great talking about the Eastern family, both old and new. Remember, you can always listen to the radio show on your computer by going to www.ealradioshow.com or on your sponsor's website www.repaonline.com. Of course, this is the Retired Eastern Pilots Association website. The other way is to call into the radio show's live online phone number, 213-816-1611. This will put you right into the queue with other callers. You may even want to join the conversation or ask the host or the guest any kind of question. We encourage you to add to our show by joining us live and on the air. Now, let's get flight number 278. Remember now, we're in our sixth year, folks. Flight number 278. Let's get you in the air now.
Eastern Flight 278, are you ready for takeoff?
Tower, Eastern 278, did you call us?
Roger, Tower. Eastern Flight 278, winds are from the west at 5 knots, and you're clear for takeoff on runway 27 left.
Roger, we are ready for takeoff and on 27 left, and we are on the roll.
Both of those engines are running great. They must have been maintained by Eastern Maintenance. Our show tonight, folks, welcome. Our show tonight is of the open mic format. We want you to tell us what's on your mind. If you'd like to dial us in, Jim Hart has suggested our call-in phone number is 213-816-1611. We'd like to hear from you and talk about some of the things that we'll be talking about tonight and add your own comments. I suggest to our regular host it might be fun to tell stories we might have had during our days with Eastern that deals with, well, I just thought of suitcases, flight bags, and toolboxes. But, of course, anything else that was around your department while you were working with Eastern is welcome to. You can just chime right in and tell us about your story. Maybe even a copier machine or around the water dispenser, the water cooler, I guess it should be, and whatever. And I have a couple of stories of my own I would like to put out there that But first of all, before we get into that, let's take an Eastern commercial break at this time.
Yep. Scramble. Let's not keep them waiting.
At the Eastern Air Shuttle, we have a crew on standby whose sole mission is to fly you to Boston or Washington whenever one of our regular shuttle planes is full. And for that reason, we at the Eastern Air Shuttle Service can guarantee you something no other airline can. A seat. The Eastern Air Shuttle, a guaranteed seat without a reservation.
I love that deep voice of that commercial. And do any of our hosts or any of our listeners remember that particular commercial? Jim Hart, you're old enough to have remembered that.
You know, I must have been asleep when that one was played, Neil. Let's try another
one.
Well,
it was the Air Channel, yeah.
They didn't play it in Atlanta anyhow.
Hey, Jim Holder, welcome to show tonight. And I'm sure, folks, we're going to be entertained to hear the voice of Jim Holder on the air.
More or
thanks
less.
Thanks for being with us, and you can chime in anytime after me. But I'm going to talk about pilots' flight bags, and that's one of the stories. We're talking about suitcases, flight bags, and toolboxes. And we do have a mechanic with us, and perhaps we can get a toolbox joke or whatever he wants to add to our discussion tonight about his end of the being with Eastern. And but as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to talk a little bit about flight bags because I carried one of those. It was almost an extension of my right arm. And when I retired, I felt like, golly, Pete, what's happened to the weight on that right arm? And but seriously, folks, in the old days, in the good old days, we did carry flight bags. Believe it or not, they're probably not carrying them anymore. And perhaps at the end of this little chat about flight bags, we'll understand why. But the thing that I remember about myself is going into the flight bag room or where we stored our flight bags. And it was a room about 20 by 20 at the Atlanta Airport Flight Operations. And we, instead of taking our flight bags home, we would just leave them out there. Because unless we had some revisions, which I hardly ever did any revisions, to tell you the truth, I can say that now. After I've been out of the business for a long time, the FAA could care less about it. But at any rate, we left our bags out in the bag room, and my bag was black, as was most of the bags in that room, and I always tried to put it close to the door, and so when I went into that room, my golly, it was not there, and I thought to myself, well, let's see, I've got to have some means of identifying my bag. It's somewhere else in the room. And I thought, I know what my bag looks like from the end, because I always had, at the end of my flight bag, I had Pac-Man. You know that little round circle that had the big jaws that that grabbed as you moved along and ate up those other whatever they were on the original game boards on the internet, and I had one of those little buttons, a little round button I had pasted on both ends of that flight bag, and I could tell my flight bag because of that, but most of the bags were black, and you could always spot those pilots that were serving in the military because their bag was a military standard issue brown. And a well-made flight bag could last for over 10 years, and usually it was constructed with a very sturdy saddle-type handle wrap. Waterproof ballistic material matched stitching for added strength. Metal piano hinges for added strength. Protected plastic plates and added fasteners on both inside flaps and riveted pressure points and multi-access folder compartments and multiple storage compartments in that bag. All types and sizes were residents of the flight crew bag room. Many were lookalikes and had some special decal like mine to differentiate it from its neighbor. And as I mentioned, mine was around Pac-Man. And on the backside of the bag was a beautiful decal of the aircraft on some of the bags. Whatever you were flying, perhaps it was a Boeing 757 and you happened to get a decal that you could paste on your flight bag. And I had on the side of mine a 757 because I was currently flying that aircraft. And as I recall, this was my third bag in this, my 25th year of airline flying. And that's what I was toting around with my right arm extended. And funny thing about the contents of these bags, they were generally the same with all airline flight bags, but there was always an airline flight ops manual, airport approach charts and airway charts and flashlights and aircraft flight manuals and tools, some tools, pencils and pens, scratch notepads, E6B pocket circular flight computers, and there was an assortment of other reading materials. Usually those that contained at least one full spread pinup centerfold, but then some pilots would find room in this already overstuffed leather flight bag to accommodate much, much more. One pilot, for instance, carried an array of magical tricks and novelties to entertain both his flight crew and cabin crew members as well. He even carried a rubber chicken in his flight bag. And upon landing, he would tell his second officer, tell maintenance over the company radio, that the aircraft had taken a bird strike and would need the main windshield cleaned. Well, taking out his rubber chicken, he would open the left sliding window and, reaching out, put the chicken's head under the windshield wiper blade. When the aircraft approached the jetway, the ground crew could be seen in great laughter and realize they had been had. Another captain was known to carry a bra in his flight bag so that when the flight attendant came into the cockpit, he would be wearing it over his head to cup his ears like a headset would. Rags, paintbrushes, and other cleaning tools would be stuffed in flight bags along with the FAA required minimum items. A paintbrush, you ask? Well, this particular captain would, as soon as he was comfortable in his seat, take his paintbrush out of the flight bag. Then he would commence to dust the center and side consoles from all the left behind pieces of food, cigarette ashes, and any other debris hiding in the between the dials and knobs laid out on the instrument panels. Of course, he would do the same with the overhead panel as there may be strands of someone's hair caught on a knob or two. You could always tell pilots and that have been on vacation for how long, since a slight amount of dust had collected in 2 weeks, whereas a heavy coating meant at least a month off or a medical leave of absence. One captain did business out of his old spare flight bag. He had designed a cap with flight crew just beneath the logo of his company aircraft, Boeing 727, Boeing 747, Lockheed L-1011, Airbus A-300, and Douglas DC-9. You could purchase the caps with or without the captain's scrambled eggs on the bill. Just drop a note along with a check in the amount of the desired cap, and presto, within 2 days, a cap of your choice would replace the check or cash left in the flight bag. He was selling about 30 caps a month at an average cost of $15, all from a flight bag in the operations bag room. Another use of the flight bag was demonstrated to me as a crusty old senior Atlanta-based captain. I was new on the Boeing 727, and in my third year with Eastern, flying a trip with the New York layover, it was my first trip into downtown New York after taking the 101 bus from Newark Terminal to Grand Central Station. Carrying a suitcase in my left hand and my flight bag in the other, I tried to show New Yorkers my friendly, southern, courteous manners and body traffic avoidance. I gave way to anyone in my direct path, stepping to the left or to the right to give them the right-of-way. Falling several yards behind the captain and the first officer, I found myself nearly running to catch up. When I did finally fall in step with the other two, the captain stopped and gave me the secret of walking in the New York pedestrian traffic. Whether underground in the subway network of tunnels or out on the street level, his advice was to keep the head down, noticing only the walkway, focusing only about 10 feet ahead, and to swing the suitcase and flight bag as aggressively as your arms would allow. People tend to avoid a possible collision with two objects traveling at wrecking ball speed. Taking his advice, I managed to stay with the other two with no problem. In the mid to late 60s, someone came up with the idea of a two-wheel flight bag carrier. Actually, I believe it was invented by a stewardess or flight attendant, because they always took a full wardrobe in their suitcase and saw the need and necessity of making it easier to carry the entire luggage. Guys thought this was not a guy thing and continued to carry their heavy equipment flight after flight, arms becoming longer and longer. When I saw my first roller bag hauler, I call it a roller bag hauler, I thought it was not something I would want to do in front of flight crew members. The thought of putting my flight bag on one of these metal folding and bungee cord strap contraptions would be an insult to all pilots. Captain Hank Foley, an Eastern captain and editor of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's RUPA magazine, tells an experience involving Captain Mark Britt, who was so popular among the co-pilots that he always had a senior, experienced crew to fly with. Many would bid for Captain Mark's line sequence for the month because he was so fun to fly with. They would do almost anything to make Mark's trip easy and enjoyable. They would tune in the radio frequencies for him, set the course indicators for him, and provide maps and charts already folded in the to the aircraft's position at the time. Mark never had the occasion to even open his flight bag. Someone thought it would be clever to put a brick inside. Everyone snickered as Mark carried his unknowingly brick-laden flight bag. Pleased with the joke after the second flight, the crew, they thought it would be twice as funny to put a second brick in. Poor Mark, though he had arthritis, he carried this extra heavy bag. But then one day, he happened to open it and discover the bricks inside. Somehow, he found out who had done this cruel prank, and he went to the storage room where the flight bags were kept, located the culprit's bag, emptied it, nailed it to the floor, then returned the contents into the bag. The unsuspecting co-pilot tore the handle off trying to pick up his bag. So it was Mark Britt, after all, who was the cleverest and who had the last laugh. Well, to finish this little story about flight bags, as I remember looking inside my own flight bag circa 1980s, let me see. What was in my black leather flight bag? My memory recalls a bag about 18 inches long by 12 inches high and 9 inches wide. It had an elongated slot allowed the handle to come through the upper flat to be matched by a locking clasp. The security number, which I still recall, was 0000. Certainly no one would think of that number as a security number to get into my bag. Inside, its contents consisted of two loose-leaf leather notebooks containing all of the airport approach plates served by Eastern. And looking inside, its contents consisted of two loose leaf. Looking inside its contents, looking inside. Well, I've just said that. But it also had the same compartment of the three-section interior is my EAL flight operations manual. And I had a Boy Scout Swiss Army 13 functions knife stowed there. One outside pocket contained the low and high altitude en route navigational chart stored in clear plastic, viewable accordion plastic container. The others contained the captain's Atlas. Tabasco sauce, as I remember. One time it spilled out. I hadn't sealed it properly. And I had seasoning for salads and container of vitamins taken while away from home. So that's what I recall about my flight bag. And not all pilots carry the same articles. Some carried more, some carried less. I don't know whether anyone got away without carrying a bag because I guess we were always worried that the FAA would show up. And there's another story about the Eastern hat, as it was worn by a lot of Eastern pilots, but that's another story. Anyone else have a long story like I just had?
I've got a short one, Neil.
Go for it.
Go ahead, Don.
Story, that is. I worked the midnight shift in Miami operations for about a year. Excuse me, in the mid-60s. And I won't tell you who, but there were two or three captains that left their flight bags with me in there, and I did their revisions. And they gave me $5 a package.
Good for you, Don.
Well, there was a lull between like 2 and 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, that's when we got everything set up and, I used to do the revisions for all those guys.
That must have been a very cheap captain that did that. I had to pay my kids to do mine.
Hey, $5 a bag, it bought me beer, you know? What the hell?
There you go.
Neil, I have a story that...
Steve. Yeah, go ahead.
Steve, go ahead, Steve. We got another one, too. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, and... this is a story about a good friend of mine who was a neighbor when we were based in Atlanta, and we lived in Gainesville, Georgia on Lake Lanier, and his name is Harry Hall. Now, Harry is not here any longer to dispute anything that I'm telling you, so he will approve of everything that I'm saying. But we moved from, and by the way, Harry's wife Julie and my wife Glenda worked for a realtor named Neil Holland in Gainesville, Georgia. I don't know whether he's still around or not, but at any rate, he always picked the good-looking Eastern pilots' wives to work for him. So they enjoyed that time, but at any rate, we all moved to Miami as a crew base, and Harry was kind of forgetful sometimes. And this particular day, he drove to the airport in his car, which was a Mazda, a yellow Mazda, and without the air conditioner, and he chose to wear a red shirt, and we'd drive to the airport and then change into his uniform. So he drove to the airport, and he drove into a one-way road to leave his flight bag and suitcase. And he would go then park his car and then come back and change clothes into his uniform. Well, he did this, and he decided in driving into the airport that he was on the wrong road. So he backed up the wrong way on a one-way street, and there was a car behind him that he drove off of the road, and almost wrecked. Now they get on the flight and they're going to Los Angeles, and it's going to be a long layover. So they get on the flight. He parks his car, changes into his uniform, gets on the flight, and on the way to Los Angeles, the co-pilot looks at him and says, "Well, let me tell you what happened on the way to the airport today. This SOB Cuban is in this yellow Mazda."
Oh, no.
Backing up the wrong way on a one-way street in a red shirt and runs me off the road. I have to hit the side of the road and almost crash my car. Now, this is the only shirt that Harry has for his layover is a red shirt. So for the two-day layover, he is confined to his room because he has nothing else to wear outside his room. God bless you, Harry.
Steve, there are so many Harry Hall stories out there. That was a good one.
Do you remember a pilot based in Miami named Gene LeMaire?
Yes.
He flew DC-7s. He had a rubber duck that he used to throw out at the captain's side of the window when he taxied into the terminal. Just thought I'd bring that up.
No, we also
Neil, I got a.
Hey, Jim Holder, go ahead, tell your story.
Yeah. Well, first, real quick though, Ray Crumbly used to also. Put revisions in for the pilots too, and I think he charged about $5 or something like that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah, my story, flight back story involves an Eastern captain in Atlanta named Ken Morris, who did not belong to ALPA at the time, and I was the co-pilot rep, vice chairman of Council 7. In Atlanta, and I was flying with Ken the whole month. And Ken was a little bit of a grump to get along with, but he and I got along fine. Matter of fact, I enjoyed flying with him. But every time I would come in the trip, he seemed to beat me all the time, and I'd see him over there, and he'd be reading the LPA board, the bulletin board. And I didn't say anything to him about it or anything, but I thought, well, it's free for him to look at. Well, I also had this song that come out called Delta Dawn, and I like to sing Delta Dawn. And we were going to Seattle or somewhere, flying long. Oh, I forgot. I left that part of the story. His wife had a wreck in the car, and she wasn't hurt, but he lost it. That car had to go in the shop for a long time. They had to get parts and all that kind of stuff. So he called me up. He lived in East Point, as I recall, and I lived out west of Atlanta. So he asked me if I would stop off and pick him up and take him to work, and his wife would have the car, and she'd pick him up when we got back. And they did that for about two trips. I'd go by and pick him up and take him out there. And we'd go fly the trips. Well, this particular trip, we took off, we climbed out, we leveled off about 33,000 feet or something like that, and the cockpit was all quiet, so I started singing more than under my breath, but I wasn't hollering. I started singing Delta Dawn, Delta Dawn, you know. And he looked over at me, real mean like, and said, "Where in the contract does it say I have to listen to this crap you singing over there?" And I looked back at him and I thought, I said, I think I'll just ask him, why is he even reading the contract? He doesn't belong to LPA. He should know what's in it. And then I said, well, no, I got a better idea. I said, where in the contract does it say I got to stop off and pick you up and bring you to the airport every trip? And he looked at me real mean like, he turned around and grabbed his flight bag, and he yanked out his manual and put it up there, and he yanked this out, and he yanked that out. I thought he was looking for a gun or something. He kept yanking stuff out, and I couldn't take it any longer. And I said, Ken, what are you looking for? And he said, I'm looking for some sheet music so you can sing with it. So, so he took it well, and matter of fact, I tried to get him to sing with me, but he wouldn't and everything. You know Ken's song too, you know. So many of us are gone.
Yeah.
I thought he was gonna ask you what you did with the money.
Yeah.
I think Roberta Coolidge sang that, didn't she? Made the record. Delta Dawn.
Delta Dawn, the song, that was Tanya Tucker, yeah.
Yeah.
That was back in the mid-70s, I'd say, when I flew with them. I had another story with Ken. We were flying about 29,000 feet from New Orleans to Atlanta one day on a beautiful, clear day. And he was the captain flying. I was the co-pilot. And center came on and hollered out, Easton, turn right, turn right, turn right. And I looked up, and there was a Delta DC-8. It was right in front of us. So you could see the exhaust from the engines above and below the wings. That's we were the same altitude. Ken racked that thing into about a 10G turn to the right, rolled out about 40 degrees. The Delta plane went right by our left side, and Ken said, I could see the captain looking at me. And nobody said a word. Quiet. Nobody says nothing on the radio. And this different voice comes on from the center and says, Eastern, are you going to make a report on this? And Ken said, tell him no. I said, no, we're not. Delta said, we're not either. And so it never made the headlines. But we almost hit Delta right over southern Alabama.
Oh, God.
Wow.
And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Good story.
You've got so many good stories, Jim. Every show, we got to have you back and tell a story or two from Jim Holder.
Yeah, well, that's the only logbook story I could think of. I got others, though, you know, but that's the only logbook.
We enjoyed the hunting show. And
I had some people tell me that I wasn't telling the truth all the time, but like I said, it's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, Jim Holder, let me ask you one question, and also to you, Steve. Did you ever lose your flight bag?
I lost it a lot of times, but it found me every time.
It found you every time. Steve, did you ever lose yours? Is Steve with us? Maybe not.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said, did you ever lose your flight bag?
Well, I frequently at night now lose it, and I've been called back for flight duty, and I can't find my flight bag.
Oh, we've all got the same dreams, I believe, Steve.
Yes, I'll tell you, that's a common dream with pilots, especially that don't fly anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't find
have
the
one or two of those
can't
about.
Find a co-pilot.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't get your uniform. You can't put your pants on. You can't find this, that, and the other. Oh, God. Well, I don't know how it is with
them. I got another flying story I can tell you when you run out of logbook stories. I mean, flight bag stories.
Go.
Well, I had a lost bag, but it's not anything as funny as you guys are telling. It was just a plain old flight bag. It was brand new. It was a Hartman luggage, and it was an overnight train. And I had checked it, which I don't like to do, but I did. And so I went to pick it up, and it's drenching with perfume all over that had apparently broken and all the other stuff that had broken. So I got someone to help me, and they said I had to file a claim. And so they said, I don't see what's wrong with the bag. I said, okay, you pick it up. So the guy went to pick it up, and, of course, it reeked of perfume. And I said, all right, now just unzip one part of it. You don't have to go into the other, just one. Well, there was everything everywhere, perfume had gotten in. Medicines were all mixed with the perfume, making this yellow, creamy mess. Creams were everywhere. And he says, oh, I think you have a problem here. And I said, yes, I that's why I got you. What am I going to do about it? He said, oh, just go right over there, and pointed me in the direction of passenger service. Of course, nobody can help you. You have to go online and get a claim form to submit and go through all that, and then you have to fill it all in and tell them what you had. Well, nobody believed me, of course, that it was a Hartman, because apparently people said that they had Hartman and they had Louis Vuitton and all of that, but this was indeed a very expensive piece of luggage my daughter had given me, in fact. So I had all the have, and I finally, after months of going back and forth, and this happened to be American Airlines at the time, I finally got my a payment of all the stuff that was in it, and I really did have all the designer stuff. It wasn't anything that wasn't a designer, and it was very costly. So, but they don't give you the full amount. They give you a depreciated amount because it's been worn or used or whatever. But I did get enough to cover everything all over again. So that was my experience.
Yeah, we had ramp guys in Miami that could throw a 40-pound bag 30 feet up into the rear baggage bin on a DC-8.
Well, somebody was throwing this one for sure. But you should have seen the guy's expression when he picked it up and put it close to him. You know, he was going to carry it, and he didn't realize that it really reeked. And not only reeked, but if you looked at it, it was all stained. It was kind of like a beige and brown tweed, Hartman's favorite colors that they had back then. This was back in 1989 or 90. So he did find out quick enough that it really was a true problem. very quick.
You know, about flight bags, we got area code 678 and 770. That's both Atlanta area codes. Jim, what is your area code, 770?
Yeah, it is, 770.
And we got 678. Who might that be?
It might be our IT guy. He had to give me the phone number to call tonight because my internet's down and I couldn't get online to it. And Richard Nichols, and I had to call him. That's why I was late checking on. It might be him.
Oh,
Richard.
Okay. Well, if Richard would like to say hello, he can say hello. We got his area code here. We got a bunch of area codes here. So, folks, just chime right in the conversation. But, Dorothy, you're talking about flight bags. I remember I had to buy a Samsonite, suitcase, and because I saw that gorilla. And that gorilla on the Samsonite commercials, they threw a Samsonite suitcase in there in the gorilla cage, and that gorilla took that dadgum Samsonite, and he tossed it, and he sat on it, and he threw it, and he did everything in the world to try to destroy it. Do you remember, anyone remember that commercial?
Gorilla. Yeah.
Okay.
Gorilla.
Well, with that in mind, I had to buy that suitcase. So I bought one of those Samsonite bags, and I said, well, let's see. First of all, I want to find a bag, a Samsonite suitcase that was hard, like the gorilla could not destroy. And I wanted to see, I want to have something that I could find when I put out in the bag room or wherever. And I bought one of these alligator covered Samsonite suitcases, two-suiter. And I bought one of those suckers. And I was going along real fine with that suitcase, enjoying it. I could spot it in the, almost in a completely dark bag room because it was an alligator skin suitcase. And so I picked up my bag on one trip, went up to Syracuse, New York, and opened it up, and by golly, it didn't have what I had packed for a cold weather in the winter to Syracuse. It had like T-shirts and bathing suits in it, but it was my bag. It looked exactly like my bag. And then I noticed inside, I looked around and I said, my golly, what happened to all my stuff? And I found it was Tom Fothergill's suitcase, who had bought one exactly like mine. And I wondered, and I told Tom, I said, we finally got our suitcases matched. But I wasn't about to wear a bathing suit and a T-shirt in Syracuse, New York in the wintertime. True story. True story. I didn't think anybody in the world would have a Galligator two-suiter.
You mentioned the word Samsonite. The flight attendants probably know this. Do you know what a Brooklyn Samsonite is?
Nope.
It's actually called a Brooklyn Samsonite, and most people from Miami to New York, the elderly people, do carry this kind of a suitcase. It's really one of those big brown paper bags with the two little handles on top, and there's always about 30 pounds of whatever inside. Now, if you're well-to-do and you go in there with you have the Manhattan Louis Vuitton,
yeah,
and that one's the same as the other one, but it's got a thick piece of cardboard underneath, and the handles are tied together with some little pink yarn, so that stuff won't fall out.
Well,
you try putting one of those in the overhead rack, and there's always a sleeve of bologna or a loaf of bread that comes out and hits you in the head.
Don, can you believe that we used to put our suitcases and bags and everything above the overhead, right above the seats, without any doors and lockers, you know, to strap them in?
Yep.
Well, I don't remember that, so that's way back, guys.
Well, that's before turbulence, Dorothy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
How about the days when we had no overheads and they had to go under your seats?
I didn't know you flew the Wright Brothers airplane, Jim.
No. Our DC-6s and DC-7s were the very same way.
I got one for you guys. When I worked at Pan Am, before I came to Eastern, Pan Am would fly down in South America a lot, obviously, back in the 50s and 60s with some of the older airplanes. And when the overhead baggage compartments came into venue, what they did was they would allow these people get on the airplane, and they would bring animals with them, chickens and pigs and stuff. So it got so bad that they put chicken wire, the mechanics had to install chicken wire up there on your baggage where your baggage is supposed to go, and
you
they would put
it.
The animals up above
them
and carry the animals in the airplane with them.
I tell you the story about the rooster. I won't do that again, but...
I got a few here if you want to go over them a little bit. A while back, David Letterman, when he was on television, I guess this was probably, three or four years now, he recalled a flight Northwest crew had missed Minneapolis Airport by approximately 150 miles. So he came up with a list, you know, his Big Ten list of why things happen. And I thought I'd run by a few of them, and one of them, he said, number nine would be, they said they got paid by the hour. And then the next one was, he says he tried to show off and beat Schellenberger to get all the attention that he was getting on the television set. And he said another one was, they wanted to catch the end of the in-flight movie is why they missed it. And then according to their map, they only missed it by a half inch on the map. And then they said for a change, they decided to send the baggage to the right city and lose the passengers. Well, one of the ones that really came out in the investigation, nobody's really proved this, is the crew fell asleep. Everybody ever hear about that?
No.
That's one of the things they got down there. Then there was some of the airline mechanics toolbox jokes that some of you guys have heard, some of them haven't. So I thought I'd just kind of run by them a little bit and see what you say in the logbooks. And these were actual write-ups by pilots and then signed off by the mechanics. And one of them said, test flight okay, except auto land very rough. And the mechanic put down, auto land not installed on this aircraft. So I guess that's to think about. This one I actually ran into, but I didn't write this up. Friction locks cause throttle levers to stick. And the mechanic put there, that's what they're there for. And I actually did that on a 727, I think it was. Suspected crack in windshield. Suspect you're right, was the write-off. Now, this is a classic. I think it's been around for at least 50 years. Number 3, engine missing. Engine found on right wing after brief search. I like that one. Aircraft handled funny. Aircraft warned to straighten up and fly right and be serious. This is one of the old time ones. Mouse in cockpit. Mechanic wrote down, cat installed. And this is my favorite. I saved it for the last here. Noise coming from under instrument panel. Sounds like a midget pounding on something with a hammer. The mechanic wrote, took hammer away from midget. And here's one for you pilots. There's only 3 things the co-pilot should ever say. Nice landing, sir. I'll buy the first drink. I'll take the ugly one.
Very good, Chuck.
You got it.
You know, we had a captain, and Jim Holder, you probably remember who I'm talking about. I won't mention names, but he would write up anything and everything. And on this particular flight, and I received the airplane, and the mechanic came to me and looked at me, and he said, what do you want to do about this, Captain? And I said, well, what's the problem? He said, well, read this write-up. And I read the write-up, and it said, the magnetic compass was off by 10 degrees. And his comment was that he had flown and lined the airplane up with latitudes running east-west and found that the compass was off, the magnetic compass was off 10 degrees. And there's a little bit more to the story, but I could not believe that write-up.
Well, that's who I think it is. He brought a plane into me one time in Orlando when I was competing. And I had to get the last flight out of Chicago back to Atlanta, and he had written the number 3 EGT was fluctuating and almost landed at Charlotte. Turned an emergency, landed at Charlotte, and system control and the co-pilot talked him out of it, and he brought it to Orlando, and I told him, just swap gauges there, and I'll see what it does to Chicago, because I had to catch that 9 o'clock airplane to get home, but I bet that's the same captain.
Well, we'll compare notes later on, Jim Holder, because I'm not certain whether the captain is still alive or he's deceased. But,
well, this guy's deceased.
Yeah, he is. The one that I'm thinking about is deceased also. But as a matter of fact, I think you remember the one I'm thinking about left both engines running and got up and went home.
Oh, my goodness.
I know that guy, too, but that's not the guy I'm talking about.
Okay.
I can tell you stories about that guy, too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That was
the last time he flew an Eastern airplane, too.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I believe it was.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah.
The co-pilot went back and shut him down.
Yeah. Well, we had our share, and all airlines have individuals that...
you want to hear my story about my first trip as captain, or one of my first trips.
Oh, golly, yeah.
ATA.
First trip as captain. Oh, absolutely. That must be
remarkable. It was first trip by myself as captain. When I went to work for ATA, like everybody else, we had to start off at the bottom of the seniority list. But I was number one in the class of 26. They hadn't hired anybody in a while, so I moved up pretty quick and got the left seat of 727 again, and had to go through the entire school and everything, you know, and had over 14,000 hours in the 727. And I had to go out and do IOE and all that kind of stuff. And they found out the night before my last trip on IOE that Eastern Records did not properly show what I had, that my FAA had ridden with me at Eastern when I checked out as captain on the 727. So they decided that the FAA had to come ride with me. And it turned out that we were going into Milwaukee. It was a short flight up there, so he came out and sat on the jump seat and read the newspaper. And we flew up to Milwaukee, and when we landed, there was a message for Captain Holder to call crew schedule. So I did, and they said, we need you in Indianapolis for a 4 o'clock charter flight to Las Vegas. Now, I had not had time to put my 4 stripe on, and at ETA, they gave you a captain's hat when you checked out. It's completed, so I was flying left seat with 3 stripes and a co-pilot's hat. So I jump on a TWA commuter or something like that, and I hauled tail down to Indianapolis and got there around 2 o'clock, and I go into the flight left around 4 o'clock, and I go in at around 3 o'clock, something like that. And there's nobody in there, no co-pilot, no engineer or anything. And I go over and I fill out the paperwork, and I see this young co-pilot come walking in. And I turn to him and say, you got to remember, I'm wearing 3 stripes and got the regular hat. And I said, Captain, I've got the paperwork all done for you here. And he looked at me horrified. He said, well, I'm not the captain. And I said, well, look at me, I'm a co-pilot. He said, I don't know what's going on here. You know, of course, guy behind the desk was in on it, you know. And this guy got horrified, and he said, well, you know, I'm not going to fly this trip. And I said, whoa, come on now. Let's, this is just a joke. He said, no, I just resigned from ATA. And I said, what? Are you trying to outdo me? You know? He said, yes. That's why I'm late getting here, because I went up and turned in my letter of resignation to ATA effective tomorrow morning, and I'm not going to fly. I said, hold it, man. Listen, come on. You can't do this. Well, he taught me a lesson. He taught, like he said, Mississippi. He taught me to suck eggs. But he did. He got on the airplane, and we flew to Las Vegas, and I shook his hand and wished him well. I think he went with United or American, something like that. But he
did. Neil, I have a story about passenger baggage.
About what?
Jim Holder, thank you so much for that story. That's great. I've got one very similar to that I'd like to tell one day about me for a flying co-pilot in a brown suit as a co-pilot. But, Jim Hart, you got a story?
Yes, I do, Neil. In 1953, I was a sales representative at Eastern in Hartford, Springfield. And once I evidently proved that I could do a good job selling, they sent me to New Haven as a city sales manager. Tweed New Haven Airport, where I had an airport and a city ticket counter. And I'll tell you, it was a wonderful experience. And my ticket counter people were excellent. And I'll tell you, I learned about a brand new service from New Haven to New York City to all 3 airports. Apparently, the airplanes that were going in and out of Tweed New Haven Airport were 740s, very small airplanes.
Convair or Martins?
Convair 440 and a Martin 404, yes. Thank you, Neil.
Okay.
And anyway, the weather would be so bad that they either couldn't get in or out. So there was a gentleman from the New Haven area by the name of Mr. Edward DeLauro. He said, hey, listen, I'm going to start a limousine service from New Haven to New York City to all three airports. Well, when I was assigned to New Haven, it was said, Jim, you better meet Mr. DeLauro. I did, and what an experience I had. Mr. DeLauro was using Chrysler New Yorker stretch limousines, a fantastic service in every way. So he took me at this point through his entire system, and we're driving through, and his whole area was so large, it was like going through a tunnel. And I looked as we were driving through. I said, Ed, what's that bag doing over there in the corner? He said, I don't know. He said, Charlie, what's that bag doing over in the corner? Charlie said, I don't know. I said, Ed, why don't we get that bag and take it back to your office and take a look at it? Which we did, and you cannot believe what happened. We opened the bag. It carried an American Airlines tag, and apparently someone had put that bag on his limousine service, even though they were not taking the limousine. So I said, well, let's take a look. We looked inside, and there was United States government super secret papers. I said, oh, my God. And so I said, Ed, I have to call the American Airlines home office in New York and tell them what we found. I called them, and when I told them what we had found, they said, oh, my God, we've been looking for that bag for weeks. So I told them where I was, and you know, within just a few hours, American Airlines sent a representative. He had to identify himself, and we released the bag to him. And I said to him, I said, well, it looks like important papers. He said, you cannot believe how important they were. So apparently American Airlines took them and they delivered them to the proper people. But can you imagine, here's a great big limousine service. Someone somehow had put the wrong bag on the wrong limousine. And I know that we have had times before this, and our host, the SEAL Intriago, down in the Boca area. So SEAL used to work in the security area with a company, and I think I may have mentioned this to her before, but it was just unbelievable that we found the luggage when we did, and apparently we saved ourselves from these important papers getting into the wrong hands. That's my story, Neil.
You know, Jim, it's stories like that go on. I would imagine go on every day with the airlines, and so many things happen that we would not believe. And even with Eastern, but today the carriers, I'm sure, experience very similar things that you just relayed. And, you know, we were talking earlier before we went on air about all of the lost baggage where you can go and buy certain things that have not been claimed. And
that's right.
Maybe there's someone that's listening as a host or listeners that could tell us where that central, I think it's in Mississippi or Alabama, where you can actually go and buy lost, items from lost baggage. I think we did a show about 2 or 3 years ago. Anybody recall that?
Yes, there was something on national television. It may have even been 60 Minutes, when they told about this whole thing, Neil.
Yeah.
It probably was, yeah.
Yeah. Well, interesting. There's so many stories happening every day on all the airlines now and in the past.
You guys,
thanks so much.
Appreciate
Don?
We used to, the new hires, the part-time agents in Miami, we would send them over to 36th Street, and we'd tell them to check with one of the maintenance guys there. We need a spool of flight line or a bucket of prop wash, whatever it might be. And they would actually go over there and ask about it. And they knew what we were doing. They just played along with it. One gal came back with an empty bucket. The mechanic told her, said, "Well, we don't have it here. You got it back in the terminal." So she said, "Okay, so I got this bucket back."
Prop wash.
Don,
Neil,
that sounds
those...
like something that Chuck Albright would do.
Oh, I would
sure
do
he did.
That. I know a guy in our tech school, some tech school supervisor, he messed up in class or something, and he told the kid, "Go get me a whole bucket of pop wash."
Pop wash.
Now, let me tell you, we were all jet engine mechanics, so prop-wise, they're unheard of, you know? And he scratched his head, and he walked off, and he was gone for 3 days. And what he had done was, he had run into somebody had told him, and he got in his car, and he went home.
He couldn't find prop-wash, right?
Yeah. One of those unclaimed baggage centers, according to the great unknown here, is in Alabama. Scottsboro, Alabama is where it's at.
Well, it's about near time for us to say goodnight, but before we do, I want to tell our listeners that we're going to be down, when I say we, myself, Dorothy Gagnon, and Don, who are on the show tonight, and also Captain Ed Slane. Myself and Captain Emery Martinelli.
We'll be with you.
Yeah, we'll be going down to Miami, and we're going down to the Eastern Airlines headquarters. And hopefully, Dorothy will be able to get lots of photographs. And if she encourages us, we'll take some pictures for you, Dorothy, of the new Eastern headquarters, because it's very impressive for a very brand new startup airline. And Ed has said that he would be happy to see us. So we're going down to see him on Thursday. And we look forward to that little visit. And we'll be reporting about our visit in the next show. So that'll be next week. And, Dorothy, you have anything you want to talk about?
Well, just a quick mention. The Kit newspaper is out this week, and you're going to find a little article in there that we put in. The Hotley plaque is now hanging in Ed Weigel's area down in Building 5, and it was given to them by era President Michael Zoll, along with Vito Borelli. They took it out of the warehouse and brought it down and donated it to Ed Weigel, and we have a picture of them in the newspaper. So that's on the front page, this article, this issue. So everybody look for it. It should be out to people this week, if someone already got theirs, so I know it's out. And I do want to mention about the upcoming 2016 reunion that we're having down in Fort Lauderdale. Everyone needs to take a look at the reservation form and send it in to us and join us It's $125 per person. It's for a great weekend. That's for two nights. We have entertainment on Friday evening, have a star ballroom, and we also have an entertainer, singer, Richard Frank, and they'll be dancing. We have on Saturday evening, of course, is going to be the banquet dinner, a delicious dinner. And we have the roast that we're giving for Vito Borelli. And we have, as one of the speakers, Ed Weigel is going to plan to be there. And we have several other family members. Bob Wilbur is going to be honored into the Hall of Fame along with Vito Borelli. So we encourage everyone to take a moment and fill in their registration form and send it in to us, and then go to the website. And the Embassy Suites Hotel has given us a rate of $129 for the evening for each day, and we encourage you to also sign up for that. It's a great rate, and you get breakfast, full breakfast in the morning, and happy hour that goes along with that reservation. So please join us. It's September 23rd, 24th, and checking out on the 25th. Back to you, Neil.
Thank you very much, Dorothy. And we have two reunions, and well, we call ours a reunion, and the convention of REPA, which is a Retired Eastern Pilots Association's convention, annual convention, and it will be held this year in Asheville, North Carolina. Jim Holder, are you still with us? No, I think he's dropped off. So I'll tell you that it's the first, I think it's, well, I'm not certain. You can go to REPA online, and you can look at the dates of the convention there in Asheville. So if you're near the Asheville, North Carolina area, then they'd welcome you to attend their convention. Our convention on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, actually 23rd, 24th, the 23rd will be meet and greet, as Dorothy mentioned, and the 24th will be the banquet, and we'll be honoring Captain Bob Wilbur, the hero of the flight of DC-9 that was hijacked. And so we'll be honoring Bob, and his family will be there. And we hope to have all that are in the Miami area or anywhere fly in and get that special rate at the Embassy Suites of $129, a wonderful rate, and you have breakfast and happy hour in the evening. So it's a great rate for $129. We need your reservation as soon as possible. We're only less than 2 months away, so we want to hear from you. And send your reservation in as soon as you can. It's even though it's 2 and maybe 3/4 of a month away, we've got to do some planning. And we've got great meals for you, salmon, chicken, and also steak. And it's a great meal. And there's so much entertainment and that will be offered, as well as
right,
great speakers.
We also have the memorabilia room that we're going to have set up again. And anyone out there that wants to have a table, we provide that at no charge.
Very good.
Have to give me a call or send me an email at dcgagnon@att.net. And I'll be happy to put you down for a table. We provide the tablecloths and if you would like to do that, please give me a call or email me. Back to you, Neil.
Thanks so much, Dorothy. And we're getting very close. As a matter of fact, we are overextended here on our time at the EAL radio show. So the final words, I guess, would be to don't forget on Thursdays, most Thursdays, this coming Thursday, we'll not be with you, but we do have a show offered on Thursday at 3 o'clock, p.m. And we call it the Eastern Files, from the Eastern Files. So plan on that in the afternoons. And we hope to hear from you at that time. At the end of our show, we have got four great songs that you will love to hear. So with that, I'm going to say that it is about time to hear this melody played.
There you go. I hear about that fine, that wonderful music that we heard over the years. Great landing, Captain Steve. We had a great show tonight, folks. Mr. Producer, another outstanding job at the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we worked for many years. And now, the new Eastern Airlines. We feel we fully earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, our listeners, our radio guests, hosts, and sponsors, WEPA, as well as Homestead Funding. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us next week as we broadcast our 279th show, traveling aboard of the Eastern Airlines show, Boeing 737-800. We hope you'll be with us again as we file our flight plan for a destination yet to be determined. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
Love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern. We love you, Eastern.
You know down inside. Talk to me anymore when I come through the door at the end of the day.
I remember when you couldn't wait to love me.
you're feeling all right.
Well, you just roll over and turn out the light. And you don't bring me flowers anymore.
It used to be so natural. Talk about forever. What used to be's don't count anymore. They just lay on the floor till we sweep them away.
Baby, I remember all the things you taught me.
I learned how to laugh and I learned how to cry.
Well, I learned.
So you think I could learn how to tell you goodbye?
You don't bring me flowers
goodbye. You don't say you need me.
Good night, Eastern.